hello there. Don't be alarmed. We're just preparing your listening device for Scuba Radio, the world's first radio show devoted to diving. We do this, of course, by filling your radio with water. Don't worry, we're professionals. Thanks to me, you won't even get wet. You see, I've crammed every appendage of my body into the cracks and crevices of your radio, ensuring an airtight seal. By the way, don't touch your on-off knob. That's a very sensitive area. Anyway, I should remind you, we believe in the buddy system just like diving, so don't listen alone. Call your buddy and tell them that Scuba Radio is about to begin.
We're going to start a new life under the sea.
So, am I going to drown?
Of course not. Just stay calm and let the gentle currents relax your every muscle.
Under the sea. Under the sea.
Did it just get warmer?
There'll be no accusations, just friendly crustaceans under the sea.
Where the hell are the sharks?
And now, here's your dive guide for Scuba Radio, Greg the Dive Master.
And welcome. This is the world's first radio show devoted to diving. I am Greg the Dive Master, and we got a big show for you today, just chock full of diving-related news and information, and we're going to get right to it. I have my buddy Ben on the line here. He's written a book about Sea Lab, and we'll give you all the details on how to get it in just a bit. But I'm bringing him on today because, you know, they just wrapped up that Mission 31 project down in the Keys with Fabian Cousteau. You know, we've heard us talking about it as well as everyone else. I think it came up on the 4th of July. But a lot of people don't know the history of how that whole underwater habitat came to be. And Ben's going to enlighten us today. Ben, welcome to Scuba Radio. How are you?
Thanks, Greg. Good to be here with you on Scuba Radio.
Yeah, first of all, let's give the book a plug. The name of the book is what?
Well, my book is called Sea Lab, America's Forgotten Quest to Live and Work on the Ocean Floor. And the forgotten part is especially poignant to me during this time that Mission 31 was going on, and as we approach the 50th anniversary of the first Sea Lab, because folks have not been hearing a lot about it on TV or in the news.
Yeah, the Aquarius Project gets all the publicity, at least for the last month, because of that Mission 31 thing that Fabian Cousteau was doing to break his grandfather's record and all this kind of stuff. However, Sea Lab was the precursor to that underwater habitat. Am I right?
Yeah, Aquarius Reef Base south of the Florida Keys is very much a descendant of Sea Lab. What they're doing down there is known as a saturation dive, as some of your listeners may know, which basically involves staying down long enough so that your body absorbs all those good gases that you're breathing to the point that you can stay indefinitely and postpone your decompression for days or weeks or months. And this was actually the concept that was pioneered by the guys behind Sea Lab. And so the fact that they can do that at Aquarius comes out of that research and out of that experience. And the other part of Sea Lab was if saturation diving works, we're going to, and divers are going to be able to stay down indefinitely, they're going to need somewhere to stay, like a shelter, like
right.
A space station, or a mountaineer needs a tent. So mm-hmm. That is where the habitat concept came from, and that's the legacy that you find still enduring at the Aquarius Reef Base.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the Sea Lab project is not as well known. I don't know why, but that's what your book, attempts to shed light on, right?
Yes, it sure does. It's the first book to really explain who the team was behind Sea Lab, how it came about, and the really substantial risks they took, very much analogous to the space program, to see if it was indeed possible to make these long-duration dives and to make them deeper than ever thought possible. And obviously there was some risk involved in that, and even today, once you're down on a saturation dive to a certain depth, one of the things you cannot do is surface. Surfacing is not an option because you have a long decompression process still to go through. And so while it may seem simple to, you know, swim down 100 or 200 feet or so and stay there for a while, it's not for a variety
yeah.
of reasons, but is that you can't just swim for the surface for reasons of panic or sickness or habitat failure or any number of things. So it's very much like the isolation of being out in space, which is why right now, as a matter of fact, they just started one of the many missions they've done at Aquarius with future astronauts, because it turns out that living down there at Aquarius puts you in a kind of isolated and difficult situation, about as close to anything as there's available on Earth to simulate the conditions that they would experience in space.
That's right. I know they do a lot of their training at NASA, I believe, in Houston, in a big pool, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right?
Right. Well, what they've done is taken that a step further and say, well, let's get out of the pool where we know, you know, at the end of the day, we can get out of here and it's all good.
Right.
And put ourselves in the saturation dive at the Aquarius Reef Base, where we've got to perhaps be creative about problems that arise or issues that come up and deal with them on the scene without the ability to surface, because it's not safe before going through decompression. So in that respect, the mindset of the that the astronauts have to have underwater and being down on a saturation dive is very much more like what they have in space, whereas in a tank, you know, somewhere in the back of their minds they're thinking like, well, this is really not going very well, but in another couple hours we can all get some coffee and try
right.
this again tomorrow.
We got a bailout. We can easily get out of this mess. It's just a test, a simulation. But if you go underwater, it's the real deal.
I've been told by NASA folks that that's important, you know, and a saturation dive, because once you're down, sort of like once you're in orbit, you can't just kind of throw your hands up and go home. You've got to, you know, use some, you've got to deal with things, problems as they come up, much as you might have to in space.
Right. Now, the C-Lab project, celebrating its 50-year anniversary this month. And
it's incredible. I mean, this time, 50 years ago, four guys whose names have been largely lost to history, but are sort of, to my way of thinking, the Mercury 7 of divers, these first aquanauts, they were living at nearly 200 feet down in the Atlantic, southwest of Bermuda, and about to do so. They would have been on about day three today, 50 years ago, at a substantial depth even today for a dive, something nearly 200 feet. But they were also planning to stay for 3 weeks, which was unheard of, completely off the charts, and in many respects still is today, unless you're set up for a saturation dive, such as the ones they do at Aquarius Reef Base.
Right. So, I mean, what has happened to these guys? Are any of them still around or no?
One of those original four is still around, alive and well. And, you know, it's funny that, you know, we're on the also overlapping with the 45th anniversary of the moon landing. And I'm sure folks may have heard some Buzz Aldrin and some of the other folks from the Apollo program popping up for interviews. And, of course, I'm always thinking, like, well, maybe it's time to interview the sole surviving aquanaut from this great adventure 50 years ago, and that
yes.
would be Bob Barth is his name, a Navy diver who was involved, as a matter of fact, from the very beginning of the laboratory tests they were doing for C-Lab, same as the space program. They started out with animals and then human volunteers in a lab before they took this concept of saturation diving and sea dwelling out to the sea with C-Lab 1. And Bob was a volunteer in the lab, and Bob was with C-Lab 1 and C-Lab 2. Bob is such a modest guy that if somebody like Anderson Cooper were to call him up and say, hey, Bob, 50 years ago you were living on the seafloor. Nothing like this had ever been done.
Right.
What was it like? I mean, you couldn't surface. You were using all this prototype equipment that might or might not work. You know, what can you tell us about that? And Bob would say something, well, Anderson, yeah, it was really no big deal. Dr. Bond, who's the father of C-Lab, and he pretty much knew what he was doing, and we had confidence in Dr. Bond and figured we would all be fine. And, you know, and the modesty is an understatement is great, because it really was very risky for those reasons I just mentioned.
Yeah. Now, I would imagine, was this a big deal at the time 50 years ago, all over the news, and just has been one of those stories that have been swallowed up, or was this kind of one of those under-the-table projects that the Navy or something was doing?
It was definitely under the radar on the news, not intentionally. The Navy wasn't trying to be secretive about it, nor was it trying to make the kind of splash, so to speak, that NASA was when they introduced the Mercury 7 astronauts with great fanfare, and they just went off and did the experiment quietly 25 miles southwest of Bermuda, which didn't really help when it came to boating reporters out there to have them see what was going going on, and you're at a time in the early days of television where they certainly weren't going to take cameras down to see what was happening, and even if they did, they could only stay for a few minutes because they weren't on a saturation dive. So long story short, there was very little, really incredibly little in the news for something that was really about to do some historic barrier breaking with respect to manned undersea activities.
It's a fascinating story documented thoroughly in your book, which once again the title is...
Lab, America's Forgotten Quest to Live and Work on the Ocean Floor, and we've got some nice discussions going on about the 50th on my Facebook page, which you can reach easily by my website, www.benhelwarth.com. Yeah, it's a great American story, and I'm glad you could talk with me today to help share it a little bit with some people who might be interested in what was actually happening 50 years ago this week.
Well, I have no doubt that divers have a little bit more vested interest in a story like this, and we'll find it very entertaining reading. Ben, thank you so much.
Sure, yeah, certainly what they did plays into everything modern-day divers do in many, many ways, as people will probably see if they get into the book.
Absolutely. All right, we got more coming up on the world's first radio show devoted to diving. Stay close.
This is the Worldwide Scuba Radio Network.
For over 20 years, Explorer Ventures has been taking people just like you aboard their liveaboard dive vessels. You start as a guest and leave as a friend. It's a philosophy that comes from the top down at Explorer Ventures, and just maybe why Explorer Ventures is one of the best repeat customer stats in the dive industry. Of course, they offer spectacular diving in the Bahamas, Turks and Caicos, and Galapagos. All the details are right there at ExplorerVentures.com, but it's the people and the friendships one makes on these adventures that really sets Explorer Ventures apart from the rest. That's why we've made Explorer Ventures the official liveaboard company of Scuba Radio. Matter of fact, we'll be on several trips throughout the year, and we'd love for you to join us on any of these great diving adventures. However, the bottom line is, Explorer Ventures does the liveaboard dive experience right. Call them and see for yourself at 1-800-322-3577 or visit ExplorerVentures.com. That's ExplorerVentures.com.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
Deepwater Cay in the Bahamas has been a bone fishing paradise for over 50 years. However, what has been bringing world-class anglers and Hollywood stars to this private island paradise is also quite impressive underwater. So after a multi-million dollar renovation, Deepwater Cay now offers scuba diving to their long list of water sport activities. It's an all-inclusive out-island experience with unspoiled diving, easy access to the States, and exceptional food and accommodations. Treat yourself like the star you are at Deepwater Cay. Go to deepwaterkay.com.
Scuba Radio. Scuba Radio.
Prepare to rig for dive!
Your surface interval is complete. You're now clear to dive with Scuba Radio.
Scuba Radio.
The world's first radio show devoted to diving.
Scuba Radio.
Dive, dive, dive.
I've written quite a bit of X-Men fan fiction. Captain Mutato is half man, half mermaid, so he can fight crime as a man and make love as a mermaid. Most of my writing involves the latter.
Can't swim, so I took a boat to an island so remote. Only Johnny Depp has ever been to it before. I stayed there till the air was clear. I was bored and out of tears. Then I saw you washed up on the shore.
This is the world's first radio show devoted to diving. I am Greg the Dive Master. Time for our little mermaid update. Not with one of ours. Yes, we have our own pod of Scuba Radio mermaids. However, I want to familiarize yourself with a mermaid that I've seen in the past, but I didn't really know what she was doing in her mermaid world, in the world of mermaidium. I don't know. Mermaid Linden is on Scuba Radio right now. How are you?
I'm doing swimmingly, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm good. You know, you have your own little mermaid thing going on out there in the left coast. You know, there are some people that take this mermaid thing and really have turned it into a full-time gig, and that's what you have done, right?
Yes, it has been many years coming and a lot of time dedication, and it has really just been an amazing experience. And continues to surprise me every day.
You have a very big presence online. It's mermaidsinmotion.com. People can go there and check out what you're up to. But the big thing that caught my eye a couple weeks ago is you were running a Kickstarter program to fund a web TV show, or the Mermaid Minute. Is that it?
Yes, the Mermaid Minute, which is basically a children's ocean educational web series that I dreamed up while shampooing my hair one day. Usually okay. When I'm massaging my brain, I think of my best ideas.
Sure.
And it came to me and I realized that there was a really fun, unique way to educate kids about the ocean, which is my passion. So I love to teach kids about swimming and water safety so they want to get in the water in the first place and then see the ocean animals themselves and experience the magic of our underwater world. So thus was born the Mermaid Minute, which is a one-minute episode, basically, or 1 minute with bumpers on each end, an intro and an outro, and it teaches kids about one topic in the ocean at a time in a mermaid minute.
Yeah, just long enough to keep their attention, because that's about as long as you're going to keep them, is about a minute, right?
Exactly. Usually that's about right. So for something that's information heavy, but I try to make it really fun and visually and auditorily interesting.
So. All right. So you started this online. It actually kind of took off and got quite a following, got quite a bit of interest. And then what the next phase was, let's try this again on a bigger scale. And that's what led to the Kickstarter thing, or what?
I like your pun just then, a bigger scale.
We work them in everywhere we can. Right. Yes.
Yeah, I drop them in regularly, too. I love it. But, no, the Mermaid Minute Season 1, I pulled together just with, you know, basically friends and family and people helping me out, and I had absolutely zero budget for it. So pulling it together was a real challenge, but also really fun. And I now have millions of views on it and over 20,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel, which is the Mermaid Linden channel. So I decided, okay, if my little sea fans would like to have more episodes, which I was hearing, you know, we love it, please, I'm a teacher, I'm a parent, I'm a kid, I love it, I'd love to see more. I thought, you know what, I want to do this and do it right. I'd love to do this in a much more, yes, large-scale format.
Uh-huh.
So thus, I decided Kickstarter was a great platform for me to see if the public really did want more. And indeed, they did, because I got overfunded last
Yay.
Week.
Well, that's good. You know, and they're produced really nice. I mean, I've had a little experience with video production back in the day, and it's good to see things that are put out there, especially when they're even when they're just out on the web, and you can see they're produced well. And you definitely have, some skills, or you got a team that's working with you to make it look very entertaining and appealing to the kids, right?
Thank you. Yes, I've worked hard. My background is in film, so I went to Emerson College in Boston for film and got my degree in film and science, and with the impetus of doing underwater wildlife documentaries. And this is just the perfect outlet for that type of entertainment and edutainment for me.
Yes.
So it's so much fun.
Well, good. You know, I think it's a neat thing you're doing. Where does it go from here? Could the Mermaid Minute expand into the Mermaid Hour, or, I don't know, event or something? Or the sky's the limit, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. And I have so many exciting ideas that can branch off from Mermaid Minute. And I've been approached by a bunch of different people with regard to, ooh, how can we kind of expand on this and make it grow into something bigger and better? And it appears that things are definitely happening and bubbling under the surface. So I'm really looking forward to seeing over the next year what this grows into. Absolutely. I'd love it to be an expanded version of itself, like a 30-minute series maybe for kids, because I think that could potentially be really fun for them.
Sure. Now, what about other things that go on in California? I mean, I know you play mermaid at events and parties, and people can hire you to show up and swim in their pool, and, you know, that's a cool little gig, but are you doing some, like, TV work and film work outside of your little mermaid minute thing there in Hollywood, or what?
Well, I'm pretty much focused on just Mermaid Minute right now as per the funding, but previously to that, I work on all sorts of underwater shoots. I've done commercial shoots, and I help other people do magical things underwater when they might not necessarily have the experience. I'm a scuba diver as well, of course, mm-hmm. and used to work closely with Patty, and you'll see me in a lot of their material. So scuba diving is a big passion as well. So I'm always doing dives, filming. Of course, I can't film when I'm mermaiding, so other people are filming me when I'm underwater, but it's a lot of fun to be on different underwater sets, whether it's for music videos or commercials or doing education for kids.
Yes. Now, I have found that mermaids tend to, gather in schools or something. Like, we have our pod of mermaids here at Scuba Radio. Do you have a lot of people that have been introduced to your little mermaid world that you've kind of brought them in? Like, well, hey, you could be a mermaid too, and this is what you got to do, or what? What have you been doing in that regard?
Absolutely. I had the honor and pleasure of training the mermaids up at Dive Bar in Sacramento when they opened, and just absolutely loved working with these girls, and actually some guys too, who don their tails and hop in the tank and entertain the people at Dive Bar up there. And I've worked with a bunch of other mermaids over the past 6 to 8 years. So some people are really into adult entertainment and just, you know, high-end parties, and some people are more into the children's entertainment. And then you have, you know, like Medusa Irena Marina, the fire-eating mermaid in Florida, who I'm sure you know.
Absolutely.
Her tiki-style, awesome retro work, and I just love all the different mermaid personalities, and I've had the pleasure of meeting so many different women and men who are interested in the mermaid world, and it's just such a neat community because everyone loves the water. We all have that in common, which is really neat.
It is, and as scuba divers, we can appreciate mermaids even just a little bit more, which explains why we delve into this world so much. Once again, it's mermaidsinmotion.com. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, and have a gorgeous and fantastic day.
Scuba Radio.
Scuba.
Scuba Radio.
This is the world's first radio show devoted to diving. I am Greg the Dive Master, and I'm going diving. This Tuesday evening, we kick off Bug Fest with a big party there at Lauderdale by the Sea. You can go to bugfestbythesea.com, get all the information, and join us for lobster mini season here in Florida, which is Wednesday and Thursday. You got 48 hours to catch, well, up to 12 lobsters a day in that area. In Monroe County, down in the Keys, you can do 6 lobsters a day during the sports season for Florida spiny lobster. However, we got this big event, Bug Fest by the Sea, happening this Tuesday evening is the kickoff party there. You can get all the information right there at Bug Fest by the Sea. Stay on the beach with us at the Windjammer Resort, where our crew is going to be there with mermaids and whatnot. We got tons of prizes. I mean, the prize list is impressive. Just the stuff we're bringing is worth you coming to the party Tuesday evening. But I know the folks that are putting together Bug Fest have put together, I don't know, like $15,000 worth of stuff. It's crazy, some of the stuff they're giving away, and it's all to just celebrate this activity of going to catch some lobsters all day Wednesday and Thursday. And all you have to do, once again, is go to Bug Fest by the Sea, get all the information, and join us for the Tuesday night kickoff party. And register for the event there. And then Thursday evening, there's a lobster cook-off where we award some of the prizes for, like, the biggest lobster and all that kind of good stuff. So just go to Bug Fest by the Sea, get all the information, and make sure you join us this week. We're going to record next week's edition of Scuba Radio right there at Bug Fest. So if you're not able to make it, if you're some other place on the planet and you're just not in the mecca of diving, at least for Wednesday and Thursday, we'll give you a little taste of what it's like to go catches bugs in Florida. It is a blast. I don't care where you are. You'll enjoy hearing about this activity, which is just a good time for all. And, of course, if you're in the area, you got to make sure you join us in person and stop by and say hi. All right, so we got that next week. And don't forget Scuba Radio Scuba Cruise October 4th through the 11th in Sabo with our friends from Explore Ventures. We still have a few spots left if you want to join us on that. 1-800-322-3577, exploreventures.com. It's the Scuba Radio Scuba Cruise. That should catch you up for now. We got a Dan tip and much, much more coming up. Stay close.
This is the Worldwide Scuba Radio Network. Scuba Radio, divers consumer tip number 276. When the apocalypse comes and the zombies take over the world.
Any zombies out there?
Divers, fear not. You'll have plenty of time to swim to safety as the undead gorge themselves on brain coral.
Don't say that. What?
Brain coral.
This is now the United States of Zombieland.
So now, here's a Dan safety tip you can really use.
And yes, that means it's time for the Real Dan Good Diving Safety Tip. And in the studio, we have Nick Bird, CEO and Chief Medical Officer for Divers Alert Network. What do we need to know today, Nick?
Your dive site.
I don't have a dive site.
You do when you're diving, and you need to know it well.
Okay, I'll bite. How do I get to know a dive site? Swim up and introduce myself?
Well, that would certainly be one approach. But the introduction begins before you ever even get near the water. When preparing to visit a dive site, the first thing you should do is familiarize yourself with its location.
Wouldn't that be a given? Otherwise, how do I get there?
You're funny. I don't mean the city and state. I mean where the dive site is located and what factors might need to be taken into consideration. For example, if the dive site is in the ocean, how far from shore is it?
Oh, I get it. If it's land-based, how will you access it?
Exactly. Is it remote, or will supplies and resources be available if you need them?
I imagine the answers to these questions help you know what to bring with you.
Sure they do. If you know where there is no place to stock up on water, for instance, you know to bring plenty of it on your own. Similarly, if you know you're going to be heading, I don't know, 20 miles out to sea, you'll know to have whatever you need with you, as it won't be a quick ride back to the dock.
You know, I remember from another safety tip that you want to check out what emergency equipment and resources are on site, too.
Wow! You just made my day. Seriously?
I feel a little verklempt.
You're welcome.
But you are absolutely right. Part of knowing your dive site is knowing what you'll need to do in the event of an emergency. And that includes knowing what emergency resources are at hand, where's the nearest medical facility, and if any emergency procedures may be in place. Of course, if you're going to be in a location that has no formal dive operation in place, you'll need to cover all of that yourself.
What about the dive itself?
Before you ever enter the water, you should have at least some idea of what to expect. You should know the appropriate water temperature, the basics of the site topography, or hazards you might want to avoid, as well as any information available on currents, weather, and other appropriate factors.
What about marine life?
Absolutely. You should be aware of what marine life may be on the site. Critters are not only part of the excitement of diving, but should an unexpected encounter occur, you should be sure to have the appropriate first aid equipment with you.
So how do you go about researching a dive site?
In today's world, it's never been easier. You're living in the information age, and never has so much information been so readily available about, well, pretty much anything you want to look up. In terms of researching a dive site, the internet is good. Books, magazines, dive centers, and other divers are also outstanding resources, and the list goes on.
What about Dan?
Certainly, Dan can be a resource. If you need to know anything about emergency resources or medical care in the area, give us a call.
So it sounds like the whole point of this is the more familiar you are with a dive site before you get in the water, the less likely you are to run into trouble.
You've got it exactly right. There's no such thing as a foolproof plan, but it's well known that proper preparation and planning significantly reduce your chances of something going wrong. So by taking some time to learn about the dive site you'll be diving, you're taking action to increase your dive safety.
Knowledge is power, right?
You know it.
Exploring new places is one of the best parts of diving. But part of being a good explorer is learning what's already known about a given location. So before you head to your dive site, take some time to learn what you're diving into. A little familiarity ahead of time can help increase the fun and your safety. Do that, and you're guaranteed Dan Good Diving.
That was beautiful.
Only you can prevent diving accidents. Divers Alert Network is your dive safety organization. With your support, Dan will continue to provide the research, service, and benefits to make your next dive a safe dive. So don't be a dinghy. Join Dan today by calling 1-800-446-2671.
We are back here on the world's first radio show devoted to diving. I am Greg the Dive Master, and on the phone with me right now is David Bruns. He runs Undersea Adventures in Kennewick, Washington. Do I got that right there, David?
Yep, Kennewick.
Kennewick. All right. See, I've never heard of this place, but it sounds fun, especially when I hear about the type of diving you are doing there in the area, which, well, I don't know any other way to say it other than, you know, I get this video and this guy says, hey, Greg, listen to the show all the time. You got to check this out where we dove these silos in Washington. And I'm like, okay. And it looked pretty cool. So, but that you're diving nuclear silos. Am I right?
Yes, we're diving in a Titan One ICBM nuclear missile base in some of the launch tubes.
Okay, and they obviously have been retired, so there's no nukes in there anymore as far as we know. Or is that what you're going to dive in to see for yourself? I don't know. How does that work?
Yeah, they were decommissioned in the early 60s. And once they were decommissioned, a salvage company came in and took out all the valuable metal. And then they just left them, and they filled up with groundwater, and it's crystal clear like a well.
It just sounds a little insane, but I'm guessing when they did that, once they salvaged all the metal and the groundwater flooded in, at what point did someone think, hey, this would be a great dive site?
Well, it was actually kind of a good coincidence. We had just certified some guys from the area, because this is an hour and a half north of us, that lived just out in the middle of nowhere, and they knew this farmer. And when the farmer found out they were getting certified, he said, hey, I've got this old missile silo sitting out on my farmland, just sitting there, and it's full of water. You guys ought to come check it out. And so they went and dove it and came back and told us, said, you guys got to check this out. And that was, I don't know, 15 or 17 years ago.
Yeah.
And
you've been diving it ever since?
We've been diving it ever since.
Wow. Now, was this unique to your particular dive store? Did you have a dive store at that time, and you guys, he came to you in that regard, or what?
Yep. He was a student in one of our classes here at the dive store. And now... Now we have the site leased, so we have control over it.
Right.
We have it locked up and secured. So.
Okay. So, by the way, you can go to underseaadventures.net and connect with David and his dive shop there in Kennewick, Washington. Am I saying it right? Kennewick, right?
Kennewick.
Okay, Kennewick. It's an accent thing. I don't know. But whatever. You know, it sounds amazing. Do you know of anyone else in the country? Is this a common thing? Is there silo diving going all across the U.S. that I'm just oblivious to, or what?
Not a lot. I think there's one in Texas, but it's really nothing like this one. Ours is very unique. The Titan Ones were the largest missile complexes they ever built.
Yeah.
And it was kind of at the peak of Cold War paranoia, and where the nuclear warhead technology was far ahead of the missile and launcher technology.
Uh-huh.
And so they built this one big and in such a way that it was obsolete by the time they were done building it.
Interesting. Okay, so you guys dive into, is this one of those things where you dive in and you come out and you take your gear off and you find you've sprouted a third nipple or something, or there's no issues regarding radioactivity, I'm assuming, right?
Nope, these, you know, the warheads aren't, it's not like they were dumping plutonium around in there. The warheads were in there for 25 months, and then they were always hooked to the missile, and then they pulled the missiles out. And, you know, they didn't have radioactive material just lying around down there.
Yeah, interesting. Well, and I've seen this video that, like I said, it was a listener who sent me a link to a video he shot while he was in the silo, and it does look like an amazing dive. I mean, there's several, I don't know, is there like two or three different silos that you dive, and then you can dive between them because the water has come up into the office structure, and it's pretty pristine from what I've seen from the video. Is that a typical dive there in the silo?
Yeah, when we start out the dive, there is three launchers, and each launcher has an equipment terminal next to it. And we start out in launcher three, which is the most open. And when we start out, it's 105 feet, and if you drop a light stick and watch it fall, you can see it when it hits the bottom 105 feet below you. So it's crystal clear water.
Crystal clear, I'm guessing a little on the chilly side, though. It's groundwater, spring water, right?
It is. It's running about between 50 and 52 degrees year-round.
Oh, man, that makes me shiver just thinking about it. But, hey, you do it in a dry suit, or you guys are hardy divers. They're probably doing these in, like, 3 mils. Now, we got more with David from Kennewick, Washington, next, right here on the world's first radio show devoted to diving. Silo diving. Just when you thought you've done it all underwater, there's something new.
Scuba Radio.
Would you like to talk diving? Greg the Dive Master's all toweled down and ready to take your call now. Call Scuba Radio at 1-888-88-SCUBA.
Hosting a radio show about scuba diving and boating is one of the best gigs on the planet. It's actually part of my job to check out and report on cool new products I personally use to enhance my diving and boating adventures. However, I do believe in sharing the joy, and this is why we've added Nanook protective hard cases to our list of products you can now purchase on the merchandise page at scubaradio.com. Nanook cases are designed to protect the most sensitive equipment in the harshest environments. Underwater photographers, listen up. From their high-impact NK7 resin to their exclusive power claw latches, Nanook has raised the bar for those of you that demand the best protection for your gear. Plus, Nanook protective cases cost less than similar products currently on the market. The company has been around for over 15 years, but it's new to the U.S., so we've made a small number of Nanook cases available exclusively for you at a special introductory price on the merchandise page at scubaradio.com. Go there now and check out Nanook. The evolution of protection.
I'm always the first to run low on air.
I'm adjusting my BCD all the time.
It feels that I spent half my dive swimming back to the dive boat and on the surface.
You can learn to improve your diving so that you can feel more confident with your skills and more comfortable in the water thanks to the Professional Association of Dive Instructors. Peak Performance Buoyancy and the Navigation Specialty Course are just a few of the many PADI offerings to consider. Visit PADI.com to find the PADI Dive Center nearest you. PADI, the way the world learns to dive.
Obviously, we have it pretty good here at Scuba Radio, but why let us have all the fun? Dive into scubaradio.com and allow us to share the joy. It's all there, from cool monthly giveaways to info on how you can join us on our next big dive adventure or Scuba Radio broadcast. Click on the Shop tab for special Scuba Radio pricing on Scuba Radio hats, jackets, shirts, and an assortment of unique items you won't find anywhere else. You can even get info on how to take scuba classes from a real live mermaid. So dive in now at scubaradio.com.
Scuba Radio. Scuba Radio.
Prepare to rig for dive!
Your surface interval is complete. You're now clear to dive with Scuba Radio.
Scuba Radio.
The world's first radio show devoted to diving.
Scuba Radio.
Dive, dive, dive.
You came all the way down here
for this.
And scuba diving.
Scuba diving? Who's going scuba diving?
We're going scuba diving. We'll be back in time.
What do you have to go scuba diving for?
For fun.
For fun?
And I'm a scuba-holic. I spend all my time beneath the waves. No more gin and tonic. Scuba diving is all that I crave. I don't need a 12-step program. Meetings I never attend. All I need is blue water. I catch a buzz each time I dive in.
Okay, we're talking silo diving, believe it or not, with David from UnderseaAdventures.net. Go there. That's his website for the store, Undersea Adventures in Kennewick, Washington. You know, this silo diving does sound a bit crazy. Is that the typical reaction when you tell people that you're diving silos that used to have nuclear warheads in them there, David, or what?
Yeah, a lot of times that's the initial reaction.
Yeah.
They think it does have an initial attraction to more of the technical divers, even though you do not need to be a technical diver to go in there.
Well, let's talk about that, because, you know, this video that I watched, which is impressive, and by the way, is there a link to it from your website, or was he just one of your customers who posted this video that was produced very well, by the way?
If that was a gentleman from Canada, then yes, we have it linked on our website.
Well, there you go. I think it might have been, but we'll check that on our end too. But regardless, there's video up there of this site on your website that you can take a look at and see for yourself. So it's not a technical dive per se, but there's overhead environments. Is there, I see there's air when you're traveling through the, the walkways from one silo to another. It looks like it's fairly shallow. You can swim it, or you could actually snorkel it. Am I right? On some of them?
Yes. We drop down into what we call a ready room. You just go down a ladder. It's about a 10-foot drop.
Yeah.
And then we wade through. It's between waist-deep and chest-deep water. And we go about 150 yards through these tunnels. And we come out into the launchers, just walk through a doorway. And at that point, we have about 40 feet of open air above our heads until the blast doors.
Okay.
Which are closed. And then that's where the dive starts. And there are a couple of locations in there where you can get into overhead.
Right.
But to do the dive and enjoy the dive, you don't need to go into any overhead.
Got it. Okay. So is this a guided dive that you guys offer, or it depends on your certification level, or what?
It is a guided dive. We require that you hold at least an advanced certification.
Sure.
And that you have some experience in night diving, because there is zero ambient light down in the complex.
Right.
And also, since the water temperature is in the low 50s, it's pretty important to have actually been in the cold water before.
Right. Yeah. I mean, are you guys diving wetsuits, or are you wearing dry suits and being wuss like me?
I'm a wuss like you.
Hey!
I dive a dry suit.
I don't feel so bad. Okay.
But we do have a lot of wetsuit divers coming in there with 7mm suits.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it sounds like an amazing dive. What's some of the crazy stuff that you have found in this thing? I mean, has it really been totally, you know, I don't know. There, all the stuff when I'm seeing in the video, there's a lot of stuff in here. It looks like, well, that could easily come off, or this, you know, I mean, it looks like it's been stripped down, I'm sure, and there's not like chairs floating around or anything like that, but there looks like there's a lot of stuff in this thing. Am I right, or what?
Yeah, there's quite a few things. The crib work, which is the big steel structure that is in there, is pretty impressive, because it's actually an elevator shaft that lifted the entire missile and a launch platform all the way out to the surface to launch, because this missile could not launch from inside the silo.
Right.
And so it's like a 15-story building under the ground, and there's a lot of pumps and plumbing and electrical. Launcher 2 has an eyewash station with all the basins and hoses and everything. And
I mean, is there stuff you guys have actually even salvaged out of there as well, or has it been picked clean as far as that regard, in that regard?
Yeah, anything, I guess, that would have been valuable, they took out of there.
Mm-hmm.
We try to leave everything alone, and we don't allow anybody to take pieces out.
Right.
Even though groups often try.
Well, it's like a wreck, I would imagine. You'd give it the same respect as an artificial reef out in the ocean, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, it's a piece of history, too. Is there any kind of, is there any red tape involved with the government or the state or anything with this thing? Or is this just private property now because it's on that guy's land?
Yeah, it is private property. The government auctioned all these sites off back in the early 60s. And they mostly were purchased by scrap metal companies. So, in this particular site is unique even among the Titan One complexes because it is the crib work, the steel structure, was left inside of it.
Hmm.
Some of the other ones, they stripped it to the concrete. And so, you go in there and it's like a giant swimming pool.
Yes.
This one actually has stuff inside of it.
It really does look like you're swimming through a piece of history, no doubt, right out of the 60s, or when was it built?
It was built, I think they completed it in right about 1960.
Okay. UnderseaAdventures.net. Go there, check it out, and call up David and the crew and dive with them. We're going to have to come out and see you out there sometime and do this if you'll have us. Would you, David?
We'd love to.
I mean, I already got a third nipple, so what do I got to lose, right?
Right.
Too much information, I understand. All right, hour two of the world's first radio show devoted to diving is on deck. Stay close, we're just getting started.
Scuba Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
Scuba Radio.
This seems the logical place for fish to congregate.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past editions of Scuba Radio worldwide over the internet at scubaradio.com.
So we're in international waters?
Indeed so.
Tell a friend and buddy up with your radio every week for Scuba Radio, the world's first radio show devoted to diving.
Well, it's all very nice here, but we should be going. I miss me wife and me oxygen.
Yes, we all miss our loved ones and gases. Let's go.
The opinions you just heard on Scuba Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests.
Okay, you know what I just heard? Blah, 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 blah.
They are not necessarily those of any station or network, its management, or advertisers.
Come on, quit yanking me.
Scuba diving does involve risk and should never be conducted without proper instruction and training.
Oh, what's the worst thing that could happen?
I could die.
Have any questions or comments? Feel free to do so via the web at scubaradio.com.